Week 122 of Brad's Branded Thoughts. And before we came on here, we were able to hear a kind of a classic NBA 2K song. And you guys probably don't even remember the song from NBA 2K, Micaiah. I'm talking to you. This was from 2010. You remember Waving Flag from Kanan on the 2010 NBA 2K soundtrack?
My first 2K was 2K11.
Okay. Noah, have you heard that? Have you heard that song before that we've listened to on the podcast?
No.
What'd you guys think of it?
It was okay.
I thought it was all right. Not exactly the first thing I think of for basketball music, but
I know, isn't it kind of an interesting song? That was a very Micaiah. If you get some spare time, which we know you do, when you get some spare time,
no, it's not like I'm stuck in my basement or anything.
Look up the 2K10 soundtrack. All right, that is an interesting soundtrack. It's not what you'd say as far as a typical soundtrack for NBA 2K. But we're not here to talk about video games necessarily, but it lends us to a good discussion as it relates to the NBA, because this is our official 2020 NBA bubble preview podcast. And we're going to talk a little NFL. Of course, we'll throw in the Luka Garza situation. That obviously has a direct impact on the NBA potentially next year if he chooses to go that route. And we'll talk about a couple former Iowa players. Alex and I talked on the last show. We talked about Utah and Cook, and we'll talk to our NBA experts, Micaiah, Noah, Kruko as well, about those deals. So let's get right into this. Before we focus our attention on the NBA, I do want to talk a little bit about pro football. We haven't really talked about the NFL. And guys, we've talked about college football and whether or not it's going to happen. Alex and I last week kind of both agreed. I don't think either of us are changed as far as mindsets. He doesn't think it's going to happen. He doesn't think fall football is going to happen. I do think it's going to happen. I see no way that football is canceled this fall is from a collegiate standpoint. Alex, let's revisit that just for a moment, because we'd be remiss if we didn't. Is there any chance that football does not happen this fall? Actually, I'm sorry. Let me rephrase that, because you do believe that football is not going to happen this fall. So is there any chance football does happen this fall?
Well, I think what I said is that I think it could happen initially, but I think it'll get shut down if it does. That's just what I foresee happening. But like I said before, I hope I'm wrong. I mean, I think the pro sports have a really good shot. It just seems to me like college sport right now is just going to be so hard to navigate this whole situation, but I hope I'm wrong.
So has your opinion changed at all over the past week?
No.
Micaiah, Noah, you guys haven't been on the show for a couple of weeks. I don't even remember the last thing that you guys said as far as your hopes for a season. Has your guys' opinions changed at all about your outlook for 2020 college football?
Not really. Not for me, anyway. It's still looking like it's going to happen, but there's at least the chance that it gets shut down, which I guess there always was.
Right, that's not going to change. There will always be a chance that it gets shut down as long as we still have a pandemic going on around us. So, as far as I know, I'm basically in the same boat as I was before.
So let's go around the panel real quickly. Again, we're not going to focus the majority of our time on college football. We'll have time to do that in future shows as we are almost to the month of August. But Micaiah, yes or no, college football 2020 fall?
Yes.
Noah?
Yes.
Alex?
Yes and maybe no.
So you're leaning a little bit more yes now? Is that because that's not because of as far as developments? I mean, we know from a coronavirus standpoint, Texas, California, Florida, Arizona are the states right now that this thing is surging in. Not that there aren't cases other places, but those are the four big ones. If those states' numbers went down, I think we'd all be pretty comfortable, right? I mean, I'm not saying comfortable as far as, well, let's just, you know, throw social distancing and masks out, you know, to the wind. But would we all agree that those that's where this thing is surging right now, and those are big states as far as football go.
Oh, yeah. Texas is in that list, definitely.
Well, now, it's more than just Texas.
And again, I say Florida, Miami primarily. I think about schools like the U, Miami. I don't know how they're going to play football down there with what's happening. Again, can you quarantine players? Can you put them in a bubble like professional athletes? I don't know. I think most people would probably say, no, you can't do that. I happen to think that the minds that work with all this will find a way to basically create a bubble for the... I'm laughing because we've got this nonsense going on. They will find a way to create a bubble for athletes. The CDC came out, I think, recently and said something like, well, there's like a 0.5 or 0.05% chance of a student athlete dying from this during the season. So that's, you know, that's not the main concern. I think the main concern is staff, right? You don't want to get staff infected, and you don't want it to be a spreader. So I think it's going to happen. There's too much money involved behind this. And there's also measures that these schools are, we know, playing for a lot of money, and they also have a lot of money to put into college football. And I think you're going to see something like the NFL is doing, and this will kind of lead us into the NFL talk, face masks that, you know, a lot of teams already wear face masks, basically full covered masks, right? I'm talking actual playing masks. It's not going to spread if you've got masks on, right? Am I right or wrong on that? Or is that just am I oversimplifying?
It helps.
How is it going to spread? How's it going to spread, Makai? I know it probably spreads through contact.
That's why we wash our hands.
You've got pads, you've got jerseys, you've got helmets, you've got masks on. Where's the contact?
Literally any of those could be contaminated.
Sure.
And football is a contact sport.
I understand. Alex, do you see my point, though?
Well, I mean, biggest way this is being transmitted is through breathing, and unless you have players wearing N95 or P100 masks, which is not going to happen because they wouldn't be able to breathe very well, they're going to be breathing out. If they're infected, they're going to be breathing out, even with the cloth mask, they're going to be breathing out virus, you know, particulates, and it's going, you know, it's going to spread. So I don't see any way that you can play football with, let's say you have an infected player on the field, I don't see any way that doesn't spread.
Well, they're not going to play with an infected player on the field. They're
going to be tested. You never know.
No, you don't. I mean, it's going to happen. Somebody's going to get infected at some point. I know Iowa, they're basically practicing in pods right now. So in other words, instead of position groups practicing, they've got, you know, a quarterback, a running back, a wide receiver, an offensive line, you know, pods. In other words, they're not going to wipe out an entire position group. Does that make sense? If somebody gets infected, that's smart. But again, we've had how many hundreds of players tested positive for this already. And of course, no reports of hospitalizations, none, zero from these students. So I don't think, you know, understate what this thing is. It's a dangerous virus and we have to take it seriously. And like Alex talked about in the last show, especially for older ones, people who are susceptible to it, because it is, it's a killer. It's going to be a killer for people who are in nursing homes, for people who have diabetes, bad health. I just think there's kind of like the NBA. These guys are in a bubble right now. Do you see any way that the NBA bubble is a threat to the community or to society as far as infection? I don't. Anybody who says, well, the NBA playing is putting the entire state of Florida at risk, I don't buy that.
I don't think it's the entire state of Florida. I think it's the staff that's part of some of the NBA teams, as well as the families of those that are associated with the teams that will be coming in direct contact with staff and players that'll be exposed to that.
But will they be coming into contact with staff and players when these guys are in a bubble?
Not.
Family members will not be.
Okay. So family members are not going to be in contact with these guys. And if they're going to be at the quarantine after, then, you know, the staff, I agree. The staff is the one variable that I look at and say, look, they got to make sure that they protect the staff. Noah, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, as far as it goes with the NBA, I've heard reports that they are being very thorough about keeping the players in a bubble, even the players in a bubble within the bubble, so that they're separate from media and from the outside world. Any media members are like in their own separate section and cannot get to the players except for in very controlled circumstances. So they're taking a lot of precautions in regards to this.
And am I correct in saying that so far there have been zero positives within the bubble? That's what I heard. The initial test was zero.
There have been positives, but I think they were media members. There was at least one media member that tested positive within the bubble? Inside the bubble. But I think they were still in quarantine.
Makai, what's your favorite type of bubble?
Bubble in my hot
would you
cheese
say beer. Would you bubble say like a cheese bubble? Would you say like a bubble bath? Would you say like a bubble boy?
Cheese dip. I like my cheese dip so hot it bubbles.
I thought you were going to say Serena Williams.
What? What are you talking about? Alex, what's your favorite type of bubble?
Oh, this is a great question. My favorite type of bubble.
My favorite type of bubble is Mr. Bubble. Remember those? Remember the Mr. Bubble bubble bath formula? Noah knows what I'm talking about. Big pink bottle. Remember Mr. Bubble? Anybody? Raise your hand if you remember Mr. Bubble.
My hands are firmly down.
Alex?
I like Bubble Yum.
Okay.
Corey, hey. I think you're on an island here.
Y'all can see my screen right now, right?
I see blackness.
It's connecting. There we go.
All right, let's look this up real quick, and then we can move on.
This is what we come to the podcast for. This ain't a sports talk podcast. This is a personality podcast.
Did you see Mr. Bubble?
Sure.
That is Mr. Bubble right there. See how happy he is? Don't you wish you could be as happy as Mr. Bubble, Micaiah?
I feel like I'm living in a bubble right now. I could sure use a Mr. Bubble in my life.
Do you guys have a bathtub, by the way? I don't want to get too personal here.
Yeah.
I bathe.
Oh. Okay.
With bubbles?
Let's move
on. Can we get
back
on topic here?
Yeah. Okay, so we're talking about bubbles, right? So the NBA, I think we're all comfortable saying the NBA season is probably going to start and finish. The MLB is underway. They seem to have a pretty good grasp on this thing. I know it's, first week. NASCAR has handled things well. The PGA Tour is doing fine. Colleges,
in those cases with NASCAR and golf, those are very distant sports naturally.
Sure.
Golfers with different tee times, NASCAR with drivers in different cars, they're naturally separated, so that's to be expected.
But you do have pit crew members in NASCAR that are close together.
That is true. But a small group like that, you could just quarantine them going in before race or whatever.
So everybody says, I keep hearing this thing where people, and again, I'm not, on that level of expertise or administration, but people keep saying to me that you cannot have college football if students are not on campus. I mean, that's just like, people are vehement about it. You cannot play college football if kids are not on campus. Can you explain to me why that is? I understand the reasoning on, well, you can't play college football. You can't have kids practicing on campus if they're not going to class on campus. Can I ask a question? Why? Why can't the NCAA make it? Why can't they say, hey, this is extreme circumstances. We're going to keep kids off campus, but the student athletes, we have extreme protocols in place and we can play football. Is it a matter of people thinking, well, that's not ethical? Or is it just a matter of, stubbornness that, because, I don't think that stubbornness is going to prevail in all this because, again, there's too much money behind it. It's not just us fans willing to watch football. There's too much money behind it from a state and university standpoint. I just think there's got to be a way that they can play without having, 40,000 students on campus.
Probably.
Who's saying that they shouldn't be playing if students aren't on campus?
I've heard it from a lot of media. It seems like the media does not want football this year, and I don't get it. We're talking like football media. We're talking college football media, national media. They don't want football. What they don't understand is they don't get football, they don't get a job. They're not going to have a job. And I'm not saying, you know, obviously health and safety is the number one priority with all this. I just find it odd that so many ESPN people and people that work for other, you know, major sports networks are so adamant against football this fall. And you know, maybe it shouldn't happen. I don't know, and leave that up to the scientists and the people who know better. But I just don't see how, you know, with all the money involved, I keep coming back to that, how these conferences and the NCAA and these schools can't make exceptions. I've said this all along, and again, maybe it's not practical. But if you're Iowa and you don't want 40,000 or however many they have enrolled there, 30,000 students enrolled on campus, then say, hey, we're going to have a select number of students allowed to come back, okay, including student athletes, right? So you're not just choosing student athletes. You're saying a select number of students, some athletes, some not, will come back to class, have some classes, but the majority of classes will be online. Then you can say, hey, athletes, you're going to be on campus, but you're going to be on campus for athletic events only, for athletic activities. Your classes are going to be in private, digital. They're going to be virtual classes, and you're not going to be in contact with anybody else. You're basically putting these kids in a bubble. They want to play, and if they violate that, then they violate it. I mean, it's kind of like the NBA. I know they're professionals. People, we can't treat them the same. Well, these are adults, whether you want to say they're children or not, they're adults. And they want to play. And I think the majority of student athletes, will follow the protocol. And like the NBA bubble, if that happens, I know it's you know, each school has to take responsibility for its student athletes. But if that happens, I just look at it and say, you know, they can control this thing to where you can still play football. Not saying it's going to be perfect, but again, I'm not advocating for it. I'm just saying I don't see how this doesn't happen with all the variables behind the TV contracts, scholarship issues, everything behind these decisions. Noah?
Well, there's no doubt they're going to try and make it work. Ideally, in this whole situation, the best option would be to tell as many students as possible to stay home and take their classes online. Now, in the case of student athletes, if most of the other students are staying home, that gives them extra space to work with to bring in all of the student athletes. So I think personally that makes sense to go about it that way. And at that point, if you just keep them on campus, that's basically their bubble, as long as they do not leave the campus.
And they're living with other football members, you know, team members. So, I mean, again, we're going to hear more about this. I think we keep saying, Alex, these next couple weeks are critical. We said that 2 weeks ago. It's becoming more and more critical. Right now, the Big Ten moved to a 10-game conference-only schedule. I think that made sense to us all. In fact, that happened right after Noah and Micaiah, you guys were on us with a couple weeks ago. That happened right after we recorded our show. So no Iowa State game, no UNI game, no Northern Illinois game. There's been rumblings about the Big Ten completely overhauling the schedule. We might get that schedule release here this week and be able to talk about that on our next show, which would be awesome. And some people say it's a prerequisite to a cancellation of the season. I don't buy that. It might happen. It might not. I think that the 10-game schedule is probably going to happen. I think the Big Ten has been proactive about this, as everybody has to be in a situation like this. But let's talk a little bit about the NFL before we spend the second half of our show really focused in on the bubble and the NBA. The NFL, we're talking professional athletes, most of which are, you know, seemed like they want to play this season. We did have one Kansas City player, I think this week, say he is not playing. I can't give details on why that was, but sounded like he was in the medical field as well, or had a background in the medical field. I'm not sure. Maybe somebody can fill me in on that. But It sounds like most NFL players want to play. They're supportive of playing. The NFL has not really been a question in all this. I'm a bit surprised by it. But it's sort of just assumed that the NFL is going to play and have fans. Is it reasonable to say that the NFL can put fans in stadiums right now?
No.
Definitely not.
I mean, is
no,
it going
to... I don't think so.
I mean, reasonable from a standpoint. I'm not saying it's reasonable myself. I'm saying...
You're going to have one fan in every section to make sure that when they're going crazy, they don't chest bump other people?
Do you think it's going to happen?
No. Not with fans.
Am I right in saying, though, the NFL has not said anything about eliminating fans?
I don't think they have. Maybe
so,
it's
I mean,
just assumed that they won't
have fans. I don't think, you know, these, you know, fans are, some fans are insane. I really don't think that, I don't know. I really don't know what I think, I guess. Everything I've heard sounds like they're going to try to have some fans in stadiums. And some colleges, I mean, some universities are still saying they're going to have some fans in the stadiums. Now, how they're going to do that, you know, maybe you can, if you have a capacity of 100,000, maybe you can get 20,000 in there. Am I right? A fifth of the stadium? Theoretically, you could social distance that. You know, I get that. I sure wouldn't want to be that, because not that I'd feel at risk, but I would just, that wouldn't be fun. Can you imagine a game be spread out that much? Nobody to high five. I mean, can you imagine that, Alex? Nobody to high five?
Do you imagine how quiet it would be?
I know. I mean, again, I don't. But what do you think about that no high five thing, Alex?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think the. I mean, you would have to. I think you'd have to cut it down a lot more than one fifth, just because, you know, they're packed in there so tight. Even if you cut out four out of every five people, there's still. I don't think there'd be, you know, 6 feet in between people. Do you?
The capacity of 100,000, you got 20,000 in there. Yeah, I think you could social distance then.
I don't know. It just seems like they're so packed in there.
Those people will be socially distanced.
Again, I'm not. I promise you, I'm not advocating this. I'm just speculating on what's going to happen. Now, we're going to wait. You know, I think we probably won't hear the NFL until after. I think the NFL has a plan in place. I don't know if it's going to happen. I'm with you guys. I don't see how they're going to put fans in stadiums this year. But as of right now, they're proceeding as planned, as far as I'm aware. Patrick Mahomes just got a massive contract. Anybody want to comment on that disgusting contract? Isn't it like $503 million? Did anybody see that?
After incentives.
Okay, that's ridiculous. That is not even... It's not even
half,
ridiculous.
No, it's not $503 million.
Half a billion.
It's a half a billion dollars.
He said there's he wanted security. He wanted a long-term contract.
It's the same number, but there's a difference.
Did you hear he wanted a long-term contract and security for his family? And he told the media afterwards, he's like, I didn't even know they gave out contracts like that.
I've never heard of that.
Oh, my.
I mean, didn't Kevin Garnett get like a, was it a 10-year deal? Or eight?
Seven years, I think.
I remember that being like the longest one I'd ever heard of, and he was straight out of high school.
10 years, $503 million.
See, what I don't like about that is it is what it is. But what I don't like about a lot, you know, somebody who gets paid that much over 10 years, what are you doing with that money?
Ferrari.
But a Ferrari is how much, Alex? 500,000? Not even that? A couple hundred thousand?
A couple million if you want a really, 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 really nice one. A
couple million?
100 Ferraris?
100 Ferraris?
Just saying. I mean, it's...
I was looking up the MSRP of a Ferrari.
Say you buy your mom a nice house. You get a nice house for your parent, for you and your wife and your kids. And you've got three cars. You've got cars ready for your kids. You've got
private
college
jet.
Funds set up for everybody.
You need a private jet.
You got all that, and he's still like only put like he's only spent like a tenth of his yearly salary. It's just, I mean, it's
hey,
just.
Do you have any idea how much insurance on a Ferrari costs?
It's not cheap. Do you?
No.
Okay.
To say, you got to add that to the list.
Okay, so whatever.
That might be more expensive than his house insurance.
assuming the NFL does play, and I think we all are on agreement that they are going to play. Can we all agree on that? The NFL is, they're going to play whether they have fans or not. They're going to play. But give me some favorites, Noah, and give me a couple. Give me two favorites to maybe one from each conference, and give me one underdog from each conference. Early kind of an NFL look, because we are getting closer. I mean, heck, we're about to play NBA, about to play NFL. As I say, we are about to play NFL, NBA.
Yes, we're about to play Madden, and we're about to play 2K. It's
basketball. We've got baseball going on. We've got all these sports. They're all coming back at the same time. Hopefully they can all keep going. But Noah, underdog from each conference and also a favorite from each conference.
Well, I'm really curious as to what you guys think about this. Obviously, of course, one favorite would be the Kansas City Chiefs. I mean, obviously.
Wow, that was original.
Definitely, well, you said favorites. You said favorites. I'm just, yep. I haven't really thought that much about the NFL lately, though.
I know. No, it seems like that's the last thing we're thinking about. And that is literally the premier sport in this country. I mean, it is the biggest event all year as far as the Super Bowl is concerned. So, yeah, give me an NFC team. I mean, the Seahawks got a lot better with that trade. The guy from where is he from? This is how big of an NFL fan I am. Makai, help me out here. Didn't they just trade for Jamal Adams? Anybody want to help me out on this? Alex?
Hey, hang on. Noah's on Google.
Jamal. Yeah, Jamal Adams. And look here. Yeah, Jamal Adams traded to the Seahawks from the Jets. I'm right on that. The Seahawks defense is stacked. Okay. Remember when they were a juggernaut like 8 years ago? Well, they're back to being a juggernaut. All right. No Earl Thomas, no Richard Sherman, no Michael Bennett, but they are stacked. Okay. So I think they're probably my NFC favorite right now. Everybody wants to jump on the, you know.
I hate to say it, but a team that really interests me from the NFC as an underdog is actually the Cowboys. I never thought I'd be saying that.
So help me, I will come over there and strangle you.
Goodness. Are you anti-Cowboy, Makai? Is that what's going on here?
The Cowboys will never win anything, have never won anything, except for like
Wait, didn't they win, got lucky. Didn't they beat the Bills in the Super Bowl like back in the 80s?
No. If you beat Jim Kelly, it doesn't count.
Poor Jim Kelly.
Who would you rather be, Jim Kelly or Jim Everett?
Jim Everett, obviously.
Who would you rather be, Jim Rome or Jim Everett? Alex, do you want to comment on that?
Jim Everett.
I've been saying this. Wait, who is
Jim Everett? Skip Bayless versus LeBron James.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so I'm going Seahawks from the NFC for my favorite. AFC, although the Bucks are right there, right? I'd probably go AFC Chiefs as well. Noah, give me an NFC team.
An NFC team for what? Favorite or
NFC favorite.
NFC favorite?
Are you going Cowboys?
No, the Cowboys would be my underdog. Then probably
Saints.
Say,
Saints would be a good pick. Micaiah?
Well,
Vikings. Right? I'm wearing purple. Vikings.
I'd love to say the Vikings are a favorite, but I just can't say it. You know what? I'm looking at this. I'm going to say the Seahawks as a favorite. And I'm not even going to say the Vikings as an underdog. I'm going to say the Buccaneers. I'm sorry. I have no trust in Kirk Cousins.
But you do have trust in Brady and Gronk.
They may be old, but they did it once at least.
Tristan Wirfs is not.
How many times this is a Hawkeye football podcast? How many times have I said I really hope that Nate Stanley is a great NFL quarterback because the Vikings need a great NFL quarterback?
I don't think he's. Listen, I'm a big Nate Stanley fan. I will be shocked if Nate Stanley is ever a great NFL quarterback.
I was never a Nate Stanley fan. I didn't ever really believe in him. My harsh words, I know, coming from a Hawkeye football guy, but. I never did really believe in him to get it done in a tough situation at the end of a game. Period. And I feel the same way about Kirk Cousins.
Alex, give me your thoughts on the NFL. NFC favorite, mm-hmm. AFC favorite, and then the underdogs from each.
But I didn't think AFC.
Go ahead, Kai.
Go ahead.
I didn't believe either.
Okay. My AFC favorite, I'm going to pick the, unfortunately, runaway Chiefs. I don't think you can pick anyone other than the Chiefs.
Well, their offense is just ridiculous.
But for underdog teams, I'm not going to consider Baltimore an underdog, so I'm going to skip them.
Yeah, you can't consider them underdog. They had the best record in the AFC last year.
I'm going to go with the Colts.
Led by who?
Philip Rivers.
Oh, that's right. Philip Rivers. Man, see, the league is going to be different this year, I'll tell you. Alex.
NFC.
I like the Texans, too. They're the best team in Texas.
I'll go with the Niners, I guess, for NFC favorite. And, I don't know. I don't know for an underdog. I guess I'd go with the Seahawks. I mean, I know you guys already picked them, but they'd probably be still considered underdogs. AFC, I think, go with the Chiefs, and I think the underdog is the Patriots. I think they're going to tear it up.
I do think my underdog, and I'm not a Vikings fan.
Hey, Alex, who starts, Jarrett Stidham or Cam Newton?
Who starts the beginning of the season or later?
Beginning
on?
Of the season.
I don't know. Probably Cam Newton.
Safe choice. I'm going to go Vikings from the NFC as my underdog because I do think that there was something about because Diggs is gone. Am I right?
Yeah, Buffalo, I think.
So Diggs is gone, and I'm not saying he was toxic. I don't know. I'm not in that franchise.
They have a solid running game and a solid defense.
With Dalvin Cook and Adam Thielen and Kyle Rudolph, and they've got a young quarterback in Nate Stanley behind Kirk Cousins. No, seriously, I'm serious. I do think Nate, I said he's not going to be great. I would be shocked. I'm rooting for him. I do think he's the kind of guy, though. We saw it. I mean, look at 2017.
You know, the Vikings should trade for C.J. Beathard.
Have Beathard and Stanley on the same team. but no, you think about it, and 2017, Ohio State, Stanley was just on. Had some just dimes. I mean, he had moments like that. And what I wonder is, you know, we didn't see him fine-tune his quarterback skills at Iowa, and Iowa was not, you know, let's be honest, Iowa was not historically a quarterback-producing program for the next level. You know, some of Iowa's better quarterbacks never made it to the league, never got drafted. Look at Brad Banks, Heisman runner-up, never got drafted. Never had any success in the NFL. Had success in Arena Football League, but no success.
Well, he got signed, though.
Who?
Brad Banks, right? I mean, he played in the NFL, didn't he?
Am I wrong on that? I don't think he ever had a snap in the NFL. He may have been on a roster, but, I mean, the guy was a Heisman runner-up. Let me look this up here.
Well, I mean, I know about the stuff surrounding that, and I just, you know, there's got to be a reason other than some kind of conspiracy why he didn't play it, because I think he did get signed by somebody at least. I don't know if he played, but
that was before my time. You did hear Clinton Solomon talk about that last week, Alex.
Yeah, that's why I looked it up.
Let me look here. I mean, I there's no stats. So he went unselected in 2003, signed with Washington, was released shortly afterwards, and then never made it back in the league.
What about Chuck Long?
Yeah, another guy. I mean, really disappointing pro career. He played for the Lions, I believe. Did have a couple of years that he played and started, I believe. Let me look at that. Of course, that's we're going behind before Ferentz's era.
So the whole point here is that Stanley may have untapped potential that Iowa couldn't get out of him.
Right, that's my
Chuck
point.
Chuck Long played 6 years in the pros. Looks like two years as a starter.
But again, that's the disappointing thing, is a guy, again, Heisman runner-up, and never really saw his potential in the NFL. I mean, Brad Banks, Chuck Long, even Ricky Stanzi never really made it in the NFL. Had stints with different teams, never really made it. Jake Rudock, kind of the same thing, was with Detroit for a while, never really could break through, never has broken through. Beathard, same thing. Beathard is a guy who had a chance in San Francisco and struggled. I mean, he was not on a great team at the time, but my point is, like Alex said, untapped potential. Stanley's a big guy. Scouts like his size, like his arm. He's got a powerful arm. Can he rein in his accuracy on a consistent basis? If he can, Kirk Cousins goes down. That's when I see – I'm not saying that I'm wanting Kirk Cousins to get injured. I still think the Vikings can potentially win that division with Kirk Cousins, because I'm not buying into the Bears or the Packers. And I'm certainly not buying into the Lions, as Amari Spivey would testify to. But what I will say about Minnesota is Kirk Cousins goes down and you throw in a guy like Stanley. I'm just saying I could see a scenario where he's on and takes Minneapolis with him and becomes sort of a Cinderella story this year in the NFL. And I'm biased. Of course I'm biased. You know, and that could happen anywhere. But he's the type of guy. He's a prototypical NFL QB. He's just got to become more consistent. But maybe Mike Zimmer and Minnesota can help him get there.
All he has to be is as good as Case Keenum.
Is that their backup, Case Keenum?
He was their third string quarterback behind Bradford and Bridgewater. This was a couple of years ago
Who's on the depth chart now?
To the NFC Championship game. Right now, it's – let me
double-check it and make sure it's accurate.
Kirk Cousins, Sean Mannion, Jake Browning, and Nate Stanley.
Jake Browning, Washington, right? About 95% sure Washington, right?
Yep. And Jake University Mannion, of Washington.
Jake Mannion. Let me don't tell me. Jake Mannion.
Sean Mannion.
Sean Mannion. What conference? Pac-12.
Just click on it; it'll tell you.
Oregon State.
What conference? Oregon State.
Well, no, I thought it was Pac-12. So, yeah, you got two Pac-12 quarterbacks and two Big Ten quarterbacks, and Kirk Cousins and Nate Stanley. So that should be interesting. You guys think
Stanley – I forgot Stanley Kirk Cousins played for Michigan State.
You think Stanley will make the 52-man roster? I saw he got signed. Do you think he can leapfrog those two other guys his rookie year?
Depends on whether the Vikings – if the Vikings want to roll with three quarterbacks, I think Stanley makes it just because of his youth. If they go with two quarterbacks, he might not. But he is the youngest of those quarterbacks, I believe.
And listen, what I'm saying about the Vikings, I'm saying it from a guy who's – would you at all consider me a college football expert? At all?
No. Iowa football, maybe.
Oh, wow. All right.
You went back accurately, got their record and bowl game from before you were born.
It wasn't from before I was born, but. All right. Well, my point here is I'm not an NFL expert. All right. I think I know a decent amount about the college game, but I'm not an NFL expert. So I'm kind of basing this Minnesota thing on the idea that Adam Thielen came out this past week and basically said he's not worried without Diggs. Maybe there was some toxicity in the locker room. Same thing with the
Vikings
Jets.
Have had terrible depth at wide receiver, so I hope they find somebody to fill in.
They're going to have to replace him, absolutely. And
because
was electric.
Two great receivers the last couple of years, and then literally nobody. They have Dalvin Cook to play satellite out of the backfield, I guess.
Okay, so AFC. This one's going to shock you guys, and maybe I'm stupid. All right? Maybe I'm stupid.
You're picking the Browns?
No, I promise. I'm not picking the Browns. I'm actually going to go with the New York Jets. And the reason I say the Jets, I'm not saying that they're going to make the Super Bowl, but I say an underdog because of the same principle behind the Vikings pick. Jamal Adams is gone. There was obviously, if you're following anything in the media these last couple of weeks, obviously some tension between the front office and Jamal Adams. And Jamal Adams, let's be honest, was the star of that defense. And with a young quarterback in Sam Darnold and an offensive line that's very, very, well, I shouldn't say porous, but porous, has been very, very porous. Maybe there was some toxicity behind the locker room there. You just never know with these things. And, you know, I guess I'll just throw them out there. The Jets, I think Sam Darnold is better than he looks. I think a lot of people have gone to New York and looked bad. Same with the Browns. Brady Quinn, Baker Mayfield.
Did they up their offensive line at all? Because their offensive line last year was a sieve.
Their offensive line, like I said, is porous. They've been terrible for years. I'm not really sure on that. And they also don't seem to care about relationships with running backs at all. That's my biggest thing. Because I once claimed myself as sort of a Jets fan when they drafted Sean Green back in 2009. But they literally do nothing as far as maintaining depth at running back and protecting the quarterback, ever. They literally never do it. When's the last time you thought of the Jets as being having a strong offensive line and running back crew? I mean, they just don't have it.
What was the year of the butt fumble?
Yeah, I mean, think about all the quarterbacks that have run through there. Sam Darnold, Mark Sanchez, Geno Smith. I'm trying to think. Who was the guy right before Darnold? I don't need to see the butt fumble.
That's what you're looking good at. Spell.
No, that's not it. He's trying to look up the New York Jets, and he spelled it with a G.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. New York Jets.
So, 2010, Corey. The answer to the question was 2010.
That seems about right. Sean Green was on that roster.
Behind Tomlinson, apparently.
Yeah, but again, perfect example. They have had Sean Green, LaDainian Tomlinson, Le'Veon Bell.
It was an old LaDainian Tomlinson, but yeah.
Well, but Le'Veon Bell, Ivory. Oh, what was that guy's? Wasn't it Ivory? Wasn't his last name Ivory?
Chris Ivory?
Chris Ivory.
For 3 years before Sean Green got there.
They just don't. To me, they.
Is that Matt Forte?
Yeah, Matt Forte. He's not there now, is he?
No, this was...
He hasn't played since 2017.
This was back in...
He's 34. I doubt he plays again.
34, that's really old for a running back. So he retired at 31. That's still pretty old.
He'd be like 80 in running back years. If he's 80, though, how old is Frank Gore?
105.
Frank.
And he's still playing, Gore. Isn't he?
Yeah, he is
36 last year.
36, God.
And he's on a team this year.
He's going to be filing for Social Security next week.
Ridiculous. He got 100 games last year.
What a unique nickname that is oddly fitting when you consider the length of his time as a running back. His nickname, The Inconvenient Truth.
Never. Okay, so anybody at all see my reasoning on both the Jets and the Vikings?
The Vikings, yes. The Jets, I can recommend a therapist.
I think New York's got some talent issues. I agree with you. But hopefully, you know, I don't want to see the Jets do poorly. I mean, I'm not a Jets fan, but I'm hoping they can at least have an okay year where they're not like the laughing stock of the NFL, because I don't think Sam Darnold's all that bad.
New uniforms, maybe that helps.
So did the Red. So let's talk about the Redskins before we get.
No,
to
they're not the Redskins.
So the Washington football team.
Football team.
I understand the name change. You want to be politically correct. You're trying to be kind to you know, people who are offended by this, and it makes sense. You don't want to step on any toes or be disrespectful towards any group of people. But the Washington Football Team, we couldn't have thought of a better interim name.
Literally all they have to do, change the logo, change the name to Indians. That works. But
the problem is
Cleveland's baseball team is the Indians.
Yeah, but that's going to change. I believe that's going to change because they're not there. Okay, Alex, you want to talk to him about this?
One more. What about Warriors?
I've got lots
Golden
of...
State is got their name Warriors from originally an Indian reference, a Native American reference. Back in the 60s, 50s.
Okay, what about Washington Warblers?
Warblers.
Is like that a bird?
Yes! Washington Warblers! Don't you think that's a cool-sounding name?
Okay.
Listen, Micaiah, your names are not original. Why not the Washington Bullets?
How about the Washington Nationals?
What? Flip Washington.
What's that?
How about the Washington Cavaliers?
Washington Founders.
What about the Washington Car Wash?
I like Red Wolves.
I could go for Red Wolves.
Okay, Washington. Why are you guys... What is this obsession with you guys have with wolves and bobcats? I hate how everybody's got to be bobcats.
I've heard that one, though. Like, they've been proposing that one.
Washington Current.
What about the Warblers?
D.C.
Songbird.
Noah, look up a Warbler.
It's a songbird.
Okay, can we at least look...
I'm a
songbird? Let's at least look at it. And
it's a tiny little bird.
If anybody wants to...
tiny little thing.
DM me after listening to this podcast. A warbler. Don't tell me it's a tiny little thing.
It is. It is a tiny bird.
It's a tiny little noise.
It probably warbles.
Okay, you don't think that's a cool name, a Washington Warbler?
It could work. I just think it's a little different. I would go with a bird.
Okay, well, we've got a team that's called the New Orleans Pelicans. For Lord's sake.
I never said that was a good name.
Well,
there's a reason why they chose the Pelicans.
Yeah.
The Pelican is the state bird of Louisiana.
So if
you must be hungry.
Why? Don't you know about
the... They just searched for the Baltimore Oreos.
Oh, Oreos. They're not the Oreos. Okay. I was going to say, because that would be the next
team. You can dunk the baseball team in milk?
That's racist.
Okay. Okay. So, my question is... What?
Never mind.
Okay. As we continue this podcast, this is a good time to interject here. We're talking about favorites in the NFC. Anybody here at all? And before we ask this question, might I remind you guys that we have the opportunity here in a moment to hear from somebody in the front office, on the staff of the Arizona Cardinals. Anybody here at all bought into what Arizona's got going on down there? They got rid of David Johnson. He's an Iowa guy. You don't want to see that happen, but he's going to have a chance in Houston.
Will be interesting.
Kenyon Drake. Look at their wide receiver core. We're going to talk to Don Shumpert here in a second about this. But wide receiver core, Larry Fitzgerald, DeAndre Hopkins, is Will Fuller down there now too? No, Will Fuller's not down there. Who's the third wide receiver? Noah looked that up, or Micaiah looked that up real quick. And then you got Kenyon Drake at running back. You've got a young quarterback in Murray. I'm just
DeAndre
saying.
Hopkins, Larry Fitzgerald, Hakeem Butler, Keyshawn Johnson, Christian
Hakeem
Kirk.
Christian Kirk, that's the guy. So Christian Kirk and then Hakeem Butler, who's an Iowa State guy. So we're excited to hear what Don Shumpert has to say. We also want to talk to Don about a very serious subject. So we'll give our attention to Don Shumpert, and then we'll get everybody on the panel. We'll get everybody's reaction to what Don has to say. Please be joined now by former Iowa wide receiver and current NFL assistant coach Don Shumpert. We've had Don on in recent years, and we're pleased to be joined by him again. Don, welcome to the show, and we appreciate you taking the time out of your day.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Corey. It's such a blessing, man. Thanks for having me.
So I want to talk, first of all, we've got some serious things to talk about. But let's before we get to those things, let's talk about your current position right now. Obviously, this pandemic has changed everyone's lives and everyone's routines, but you've been in the NFL several years. Talk to our listeners about what your current position entails.
Yeah, so right now, I am an offensive assistant with the Arizona Cardinals. Assist with the running backs. I first started coaching in the NFL. I got my full-time job in 2018 with the New York Giants, and I was basically working with the wide receivers, and I was an offensive assistant. Prior to the New York Giants, I had an internship with the Los Angeles Rams in 2017. I had a fellowship with the LA Rams, McVay first year, so that was a really good experience. And then leading into 2019, I went to the Arizona Cardinals to be an offensive assistant as well. So now I'm working with running backs.
All right, and what is that like? I mean, you're a guy that was, from my understanding of your background, you've been engulfed in football your whole life. But what's it like to be able to coach? I believe with New York, you were assistant with the wide receivers. Is that correct?
Yes, you're correct.
So what is it like to be able to be in that position, coach guys like Odell Beckham and recently with Arizona with guys like David Johnson? What's that like? How different is that than, you know, coaching at Iowa?
Yeah, well, the reason why you get into coaching, in my perspective, is, you know, to really build relationships with guys and to create impacts. And so when you get to see a guy grow and you get to see, you know, the development of a guy as a coach, you know, you really tip your hat off to that. Working with guys like Odell Beckham was really good. You know, he came up and showed to work every day. He worked extremely hard. You know, you talk about guys like David Johnson and things of that nature. Like, these guys, at the end of the day, it's a job. And so as a coach, you want to put them in the best position as possible. You want to make sure you give them the right information. But at the end of the day, it all starts with trust. And so you have to build those relationships with those players. And the better relationship you have with them, the better off it'll be for the long term, because then they will believe what you are teaching them, what you are telling them. And it'll just be an overall good thing. But it's been really good, man. Like I said, it's going into my third season coaching in the NFL. It's a different environment compared to college, for sure. It's much more laid back. You know, once you get done with practice, you don't necessarily have to check in with recruits like you have to do it at the college level. You know, these guys are grown, man. They go home and be with their families or whatnot. And so from a time perspective standpoint, you definitely get a lot more time in the off season compared to college, because you don't have to deal with recruiting and going on the road and having different guys coming up to visit or whatnot. So from that standpoint, you actually get more time to be with your family and things of that nature. So it's a really good opportunity. It's neat. I mean, the NFL, it goes from basically July to January. So we pretty much locked in for 6 months straight. No days off, and it's really good. I mean, the thing why I love coaching, because I feel like it's not working. You know, I'm doing what I love to do.
Right.
And so it's definitely a fortunate opportunity. I'm very blessed, and I'm very fortunate.
It's a great outlook on it. And how has this pandemic affected what you do for Arizona?
I mean, it definitely affected the difference, because typically, you know, we have an off season and we have OTAs and things of that nature where we install in the playbook, especially for the young guys to actually get them on the field to get reps. You know, throughout this pandemic, we actually just had Zoom meetings and things of that nature. And so the guys, they're not actually getting the reps, the physical reps. They're getting the mental reps as far as, you know, going through the playbook and things of that nature. But as a coach, you know, you want to see what guys can remember, what they can retain. And so it's tougher that, you know, we're not actually on the field and we can't correct the different things that we see. We can just go off. We can just basically going off the playbook, and it's a lot of memorization and things of that nature. But it's been good. I mean, everybody is in the same boat, you know, so we just basically trying to deal with that challenge and cope with it.
So what is your I know before we came on, you brought out the point about, you know, sports right now in the fall and winter is it's purely speculation, but what is your outlook right now for the NFL season? I mean, I think largely people are assuming that things are going to be pretty much as normal, maybe no fans for pro football. But what's your outlook right now for the 2020 season?
Yeah, to be honest with you, man, I'm hoping that we can go to training camp. And after training camp, you know, I guess the main thing is, first, we got to make sure everybody is safe. And so I know the players union and the NFL, you know, they basically going back and forth trying to see what's the best way to go about things. But in my opinion, I really don't know, because, you know, this is totally new. This is untrusted waters. We've never been in this territory. So I'm kind of like you, to be honest with you. I'm just waiting to see how it would all play out. But at the end of the day, it's all about health. And so if we got guys healthy, and then I think we can have a season. But if we don't have guys healthy, it'll be tough.
Arizona has been harder hit by this virus here in recent weeks. Has the team and coaching staff stayed healthy, or is anybody, and maybe you can't speak on details, but has the team been able to stay healthy during all this?
Well, basically since March, that was probably the last time we've been in the office. You know, everybody's been out on their own. They've been at home.
Okay.
So I can't really tell you, you know, what's everybody like. I know once we report back, we probably will all have to take tests, and then we'll take it from there.
What about the running back position intrigues you with Arizona? Obviously, David Johnson no longer there, but Kenyon Drake comes over from Miami. You've got Chase Edmonds. And then a guy that really intrigues me is a guy that we know the backstory, initially had committed to Iowa, and Eno Benjamin. What do you foresee from a pretty talented young running backs crew down there in Arizona?
Yeah, the best thing about those guys is they all want to get better. You know, they don't have egos. They work extremely hard. So it's really easy to coach guys like that that love the game, that want to show up on a day-to-day basis. So we have a really good room right now. You know, we just want to install the playbook to them. And this is our second season in the offense, so this year should go more smoothly than last year. You're not necessarily installing and learning a new language. So I expect these guys to play faster. Of course, getting Kenyon Drake in the offseason was great. He's a heck of a runner, heck of a guy. It was hard to do what he did, to come in mid-season and put up the numbers he did. And so I can't wait to see what he'll do this year after having a full offseason, even though it was abbreviated. But he still knows the terminology and things of that nature. Chase Edmonds, he's a really good back, you know, really smart guy, really intelligent. You know, he's all about the details, works really hard. And so I think those two guys would be a really good 1-2 punch. Having Eno, you know, bringing in more competition. He did a really good job at Arizona State. He's a tough guy to tackle, so I can't really wait to see what he can do. And also, we have DJ Foster as well, and he's a really good back. So we got a pretty good room right now. Like I said, we haven't been on the field, so it's hard to evaluate just Zoom meetings and things of that nature. So time will tell really soon, but I like the room that we have.
And it's amazing to me because, you know, as a fan, you hear speculation about, you know, how big of a loss David Johnson was. But to be able to gain DeAndre Hopkins and have him play alongside – I'm speculating on this, but some of the final playing days of Larry Fitzgerald, and then you have a guy like Christian Kirk. I mean, what can this offense do next year?
Well, you know, being a former wide receiver, I coached Odell Beckham before. When you got guys like Odell Beckham, DeAndre Hopkins, a defensive coordinator, they always have to know where he at on the field. And so from that standpoint, I wouldn't expect a loaded box most time. I expect a lot of double coverages or a safety over right. The top, a lot of cover two type of looks. And so from a running back perspective now, that should really open up the holes, and it should really open up the whole game plan for us. Of course, I don't want to put any expectations, but having that number one guy that's young and he can do it all like DeAndre Hopkins will definitely make us a better team overall.
And one thing that I was thinking too is, as I looked up and down this projected depth chart for the 2020 season, is having a guy like Kenyon Drake, who in Miami, I kind of always thought of him as a guy who is just a really good pass catcher. Obviously can run the football, but how intriguing is it for you to be able to work with a guy like Drake? And you just talked about the wide receivers that are going to be able to create room, spread guys out, create room, and, you know, for these running backs to go to work, but you're also able to coach a guy who has got great hands like Drake.
Yeah, so, you know, Drake, he fits our offense really well. At the University of Alabama, he played behind Derrick Henry, you know, so he didn't necessarily always get the full time. he was a backup in a sense, but he still had valuable minutes. In Miami, he said he had a pretty good turnout in Miami, but now he finally get his opportunity, and he feel like he's the main guy, so I really think he's going to flourish that opportunity. Drake, as far as him catching the ball out the backfield, he definitely can. He one of them backs that can do it all. You know, he can run the ball. You can line him up out wide. You can put him on flare routes from the backfield and things of that nature. So I'm just more or less, I'm excited to see what he can do after spending a whole offseason learning the playbook and not necessarily having to cramp it in week to week to see what we was doing, because that's tough on a player when you expect a player to come in like he did last year and perform at a high level with that limited of time.
Absolutely. Let's kind of transition this a little bit to you and your family. We talked a little bit about how this pandemic has affected you specifically from a work standpoint, but how's your family doing during all this this virus and whatnot? I know your father, we're going to talk a little bit about his situation, but how is your whole family coping with this down in St. Louis?
Yeah, they are doing okay. You know, just trying to stay safe, take the different precautions, follow the CDC guidelines. You know, going to my father was diagnosed with prostate cancer a couple months back. It's just pretty aggressive cancer. He just finished his 9 weeks of radiation. And so now he's going through the recovery process and things of that nature, so he could try to get back to full strength. We plan on doing a particular surgery for him, and we started a GoFundMe account to raise some money for him. You know, he's been retired for about 10 plus years, you know, the fixed income. But, you know, for him, man, he has good days and bad days. I'm actually in St. Louis right now taking care of him, making sure he's good. But, you know, I think he's going to push through it, and he's going to be okay. But he definitely appreciate everybody's supports and the prayers and the thoughts.
And if a fan or whoever, one of our listeners, wants to donate towards that cause, how can someone access the GoFundMe page?
Yeah, so on my Twitter is called Coach Shump, at Coach Shump, S-H-U-M-P. And that'd be the last tweet that I have would actually be the GoFundMe page. So if you can search me on Twitter by Don Shumpert, and then you will find the link on my Twitter page.
Okay. Well, I think when you and I first reached out to one another here a couple of weeks ago, the goal of $15,000 for this GoFundMe page was still a long ways off, and I think I checked it this morning, and it's amazing the support. Just talk about the donors and the people who have stepped up to the plate, including former teammates at Iowa. What sentiments do you have to express about the generosity of some of these former teammates and friends?
Yeah, it's really humbling, man. I really appreciate the former teammates. It's been a lot of coaches that have gave, a lot of friends and family. It just, man, it put things in perspective, man. It really shows you that a lot of people care about you. It give my daddy the strength to keep going. You know, it's just a really good deal overall, man. I'm really happy about the generosity of the people. It's for a really good cause, man. And, you know, for us, we just want to keep pushing them, man, and try to get to the end goal and try to defeat this.
Absolutely. And cancer is such a such an enemy. We think about this virus and what it's doing, but we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about the number of innocent people who are suffering because of this wicked disease. So, it is encouraging even from our perspective to see the support that people have given. But again, if you haven't already donated, go to Don's Twitter page, go to the GoFundMe page, and make a donation, big or small. I think anything would help at this point, absolutely. So let's talk a little bit about Iowa football this fall. I know it's speculation, and we had an announcement at the Big Ten Conference that basically it's still sort of vague. We don't know exactly how many games are planning to be played. There's been speculation about a 10-game conference-only schedule. They did announce officially that it would be conference-only. Did you ever think we'd come to this back in your playing days? Did you ever think there'd be a season like this might end up being?
No, I don't think anybody would have ever projected something like this. I mean, it's the last time we've seen or experienced anything like this was 1919, and
right.
Nobody was currently alive during that time. So the good thing is nobody can have an advantage at this point. You know, we all are in the same boat. We are trying to find a way to fix it. But it, like I said, it all starts with the health. So if we got players and coaches that are healthy, then we'll have an opportunity to go about it and still play football. But it's tough because at the end of the day, you know, this COVID-19 is taking lives and it's hurting a lot of families and hurting a lot of people. So at the end of the day, the health is the number one thing. Football is a game, of course, but it's not as serious as life. It's so much more than football. So this is a real life matter. And hopefully, you know, hopefully I know a lot of people around the world want to see football. I think that'll make the world a better place. It actually gives some people some time to sit back and take their mind off of COVID-19 and actually get to watch some football. So I'm hoping that we can play and we can start bringing some entertainment back to people's life.
Yeah, it's a great thing about sports is it throws down a lot of barriers and like you said, just it gives us a distraction. I mean, at this point, if you had to predict, do we see football this fall?
Yeah, we definitely going to try. You know, at the end of the day, it's a big money industry. So, you know, they're going to find a way to try to make it work. Now, I don't know how to go about that. You know, that's way bigger than my pay grade. So, I'm just, whatever these guys tell me to do, that's what I ought to do. You know, but I'm hoping, man. I'm really hoping.
And I think the general feeling on players being willing to play during this pandemic is, and I've heard this from countless people, that most student-athletes, kind of like you said, give me a time, give me a place, I'll be there, I'll play. This is the sport I love, and this is why I'm here. But would you be comfortable playing during this pandemic?
You know, it'd be something I definitely will be second guessing myself, but at the end of the day, you know, we signed up to play football. That's what, you know, we've been doing our whole life. You know, most college players' goal is to play at the next level. And in order to play at the next level, you got to put some game tape out there. And so it's just, it's really tough, man. It's really tough. But me as a player, I would have tried, you know, I definitely would have tried to make it happen. But it's just so many unforeseen circumstances that we really don't know. So I can see why if a player said he didn't want to play, I can definitely understand why he wouldn't.
How important do you feel it is for the conference, for the university, coaches to involve parents in all this? I mean, I don't know how involved your parents were when you were, I'm sure they were heavily involved when you were at Iowa in your playing days. But, I mean, these are adults, right? They're 18 to 23-year-olds, but how much of a say should parents have in whether or not their child plays this season?
I definitely think the parents should have a say-so. You know, they definitely should have a say-so. It's pretty much like, you know, once you go through the recruiting process and you get handed over to the coaches, the parents don't have as big of a say-so.
Right.
But something like this, I think they definitely should have a voice. And if they feel like their son shouldn't play, then, you know, that's their opinion. And I wouldn't, you know, be mad at them or anything of that nature. But it's just really tough, man. It's really tough. I can always see it from both angles and both perspectives, you know.
And again, we didn't get a total picture because I think, honestly, the Big Ten Conference, the NCAA, the University of Iowa, nobody really knows what's going to happen in 2 months. But, you know, the announcement that was made yesterday, they included the caveat of, well, if a player decides to skip this season, he will maintain his scholarship. And that's a general rule for the Big Ten. The way I look at this, though, and I can kind of get your take on this as well, you can tell a player that he's going to be able to keep his scholarship, but he still loses out on a year of eligibility. And I don't see, you know, is that kind of putting the student athlete in? It's hard because you how do you transfer, you know, 25 scholarships? How do you give them all an extra year of eligibility? But by just saying they stay on scholarship, to lose an entire year of eligibility for these kids that, you know, their 3-4 years in your college playing days are probably their last playing football for those that aren't going to be able to have a future in the NFL. So how do you feel about that? And I mean, is there a way to be able to financially and just practically be able to, you know, if a player decides to sit out, have him keep his eligibility?
Yeah, I would hope that they let the players keep their eligibility. I definitely would hope so, man, because, you know, you put your whole life into this. It's so many tough days, man, where you know, so many early mornings, late nights, your body is, you know, just physically abused, you're mentally abused, and, you know, you finally get an opportunity to play in the fall, and then all of a sudden, you know, we have the circumstance that we have today, and it kind of, like, puts you on the back burner or whatnot, because at the end of the day, you do want to be healthy. So I kind of just feel like, you know, it's up to the players at the end of the day, because the players are the ones that create the game. You know, the football wouldn't be nothing without players. You know, coaches just try to help the players get to, you know, where they need to be, but it's all on the players. And so at the end of the day, I respect any player decision, you know, what he come up with, whether it's in the NFL, college, or per se high school. You know, it's, at the end of the day, they have a voice, they have a reason. And so it's just tough, man. I can't really pick either side. I can just understand and listen, you know.
Right. What does it feel like to come out of the tunnel and swarm Kinnick?
Oh, man, Kinnick Stadium, man. You know, University of Iowa, one of the reasons I committed there was the fan base. One of the best fan bases I've ever been a part of. You know, I never, ever seen a fan base where if you lose a game, you know, they stand up and actually cheer for you. You know, most fans will start talking and they'll be mad and pissed off at you. I'm not saying we don't have those type of fans, because every fan base do. But our fans are just so supportive. And so, like, going into the swarm with your brothers, you know, locking arms and coming out together, man, it's a really, really good feeling. You put in so much hard work, you know, throughout the offseason and training camp, and now you finally get a chance to display it to the world. So it's just a really good feeling to get you going, man. It's goosebumps. It's really indescribable, to be honest with you. It's just something that you would have to be in to experience.
Could you imagine any other scenario, or could you imagine swarming Kinnick with any other song but Back in Black?
Oh, no, not at all. The Back in Black, that's a classic, man. Classic song, man. Every time I hear it, I always think about coming out into Kinnick Stadium in front of 70,000 rowdy fans, you know, so you can't beat that.
I mean, what's that going to be like for if they do play this fall? I mean, I think the general consensus is probably not going to be fans. I mean, I know that Ohio State initially had come out and Gene Smith had basically announced that they were planning on up to half capacity. But I mean, I don't see any, personally, I don't see any scenario where they're going to be able to have any fans, at least in September. Maybe the time we get to late October, November, who knows. But what's that going to be like for players and coaches playing without anybody in the stands? I just think that'll be eerie.
Yeah, it'll be different. I just look at it as if, you know, we in training camp and we practice against one another. It'll just be like a live scrimmage, really, or take it back to a high school game. You know, we all have played in places without crowds. You know, if the crowd is your number one motivated factor to play football, then you're probably in the wrong business. At the end of the day, you're competing and you want to beat the guy that's in front of you. You know, so fans or not, it's all about beating the guy in front of you. So I think the players and the coaches, and we all have to adopt to it, because, of course, you know, the game day energy from the fans is what makes football great. But at the end of the day, it's all about the player production. If he's producing, then that's was all that matters.
How do you regenerate that game day atmosphere for the players without fans? I mean, how do you generate some sort of an energy level?
For sure, man. We just treat it like practice. You know, we bring energy to practice every day. And so we just translate what we do at practice and we translate it to the game. It's really no different. You know, now all of a sudden I don't have to go against this guy that I've been practicing with. I actually get to go against another opponent. And so it's just really transferring that energy from practicing on daily habits and just finding a way to make it happen. Because at the end of the day, the other team, they don't have any fans either. So it's the same thing.
You're able to keep up with Iowa football with your busy schedule?
Yeah, I definitely keep up with it, man. I always follow Iowa. I see what's going on. I always watch them on Saturdays. You know, us and the coaches is always a big thing for, like, NFL teams and former players that play at the university is to watch their college play on Saturdays. You know, it's always a fun thing to do. We usually watch games before our meetings on Saturday nights, you know, just to see what's going on. So, you know, you really can't beat that college atmosphere. That's the kind of the thing that sucks about this is, you know, the college game day atmosphere won't be the same right now. But, you know, hopefully this is temporary and we can get past it.
What's your outlook for Iowa football? I mean, it's assuming that we have a season, whether that be in the fall. I know some have speculated that if push comes to shove, they would try to play at least some games in the spring. But what's your outlook for this receiver core? I mean, Amir Smith-Marset, Tyrone Tracy, Nico Reganey. Got Oliver Martin in the wings, you know, Brandon Smith. this is a pretty stacked receiving core. I mean, what's your outlook for this offense?
Oh, man, I love all those guys you mentioned. So I was actually a graduate assistant. You know, Brandon Smith first year, Amir Smith, Marset.
Okay.
I helped recruit Tyrone Tracy. I helped recruit Oliver Martin. You know, so I know all those guys. They're really good guys. And to see those guys 2 to 3 years down the road, the growth that they have had, it has been really, really inspiring.
Yeah.
Coach Copeland has done a really good job of getting them guys to lock in and buy into the Iowa system and the Iowa way. Those guys are I really expect some big things out of them. I know they are a competitive group. You know, they are a selfless group. They're not a stats or a me guy. And so when you got a group of guys that want to do things for the better of the team, then you're always going to put yourself in a good position. But I definitely see guys like Amir Smith, Marcet, and Brandon Smith having, you know, some of the best season that they had thus far. Yeah, obviously, as you get older, you know, you should play better. The older you get, the more experience you get.
Sure.
And so those guys have a lot of experience now, and I think they would lead the team to a good season if we was to have one.
How good can at least those top two guys, Brandon Smith and Amir Smith Marset, be? Are these guys that, and again, I don't know how much you can speak on it, being that you are a coach in the NFL, but how are these guys NFL-type receivers, you think, in a year's time?
Yeah, I think those guys will have a chance to play for sure, man, because, you know, Brandon Smith and Amir Smith Marset, they both have traits that you can't teach. Amir Smith Marset has the speed, and Brandon Smith has the size. And as a coach, you really can't teach that. Those are just natural gifts given from God. So I think they both have a fair opportunity to play at the next level. You know, it just really depends how the season goes.
Absolutely. Well, again, Don, we really appreciate you coming on. And again, one more plug for this GoFundMe account. Go to Don's Twitter page. And can you give us that username again, Don?
Yeah, you can either search me at Don Shumpert or you can at me at Coach Shump.
And so, again, donate towards Don's father. And I believe his name is Don Senior. Is that right?
Yes, sir. He's Don Senior. I'm a junior.
And so we can help out with the cause. And again, Don, we really appreciate it. We hope that we'll be able to see somewhat of normalcy once we get to fall. But best of wishes to you and your family. We'll keep you in our thoughts and prayers. And stay safe during this whole thing. And let's play some football in the fall.
Yes, sir, man. Thank you very much. I thank you and I appreciate you for having me, man. Stay safe out here.
All right. You as well, sir. Well, another great interview. I mean, I appreciate Don coming on. And gives us a nice insight into the NFL and kind of how that staff is taking this pandemic and taking it in stride. Obviously, a very difficult situation. We wanted to have him on to sort of talk about his difficult situation that he's enduring with his family, with his dad, and prostate cancer. He's in the battle of his life. Alex, your overall reaction to Don and that interview?
I think, you know, like I said before, when I've heard him talk before, he's obviously very professional and has the right mindset to be in the position he's in. Just kind of a side note, I just checked his GoFundMe page and I think it's up to within $1,000 or $2,000 of his goal. So I'm not sure where it was. I was wondering during that when you asked him where it was when you looked at it, Corey.
Yeah, I noticed as we were listening, 13,000, a little over 13,000. And you can see some of the guys. We talked about him. Of course, he played at Iowa. Maybe 10 years ago seven or 8 years ago, and so much support from his former teammates. And it just shows how close these guys are. Really, they really are brothers. Noah, your thoughts on what Don had to say? Obviously we covered a lot from college to the NFL, to his very solemn and serious situation with his dad. What's your overall thoughts on Don?
Well, first of all, like you mentioned, best wishes to him and his family. I've experienced it when someone in your family is going through something like that. It's not fun at all. So best of wishes to him and his dad. Hopefully it all works out well for him. As far as football goes, it makes a lot of sense from the way, the angle he's coming at it from. How, of course, with all the money at stake, everybody wants to try and have football as soon as possible, as much as possible. And to see how they're approaching it, in what ways they can with the limitations that they're facing with the whole pandemic. It's really interesting to see it from an inside view like that and to see what they're doing to prepare as much as possible. Like he said, mentally, with all the Zoom meetings and whatnot, getting these people accustomed to the new playbook and getting them in the right mindset. It's interesting to see all the steps that they're taking and doing what they can in the current circumstances.
And Micaiah, he didn't seem too concerned. I mean, we asked him about coming out of the tunnel, and obviously he loves AC/DC, Back in Black. But more than that, coming out of the tunnel with no fans, that proposition this fall, and he kind of put himself in the student-athlete's position. First of all, he basically said, look, I would be concerned, but I'm a student-athlete. I came here to play football. I'm going to play football. And I think that's he echoes the sentiments of most players at the collegiate level. But he also talked about no fans, and he didn't seem too concerned about that. And I was a little bit surprised by that, but he basically just said, hey, it's another day in practice, and we're going to play whether there's fans in there or not, and we should have energy no matter what. Your thoughts on that? I mean, obviously, he's got a better idea than that, you know, that situation and hypotheticals from a playing standpoint than we would.
Yeah, that seems to be consistent with what I've heard a lot of different athletes at various levels say, that they wish that there were fans there because the fans provide so much energy for these players to keep going, to keep performing at their highest level. But ultimately, if it comes down to it, you're there to play. So, you know, let's go. Let's play.
Yeah,
That's the sentimentality there.
But again, I much thanks to Don, and I know it was difficult coming on talking about his father, but we wanted to put a plug in for that. And as he mentioned, very aggressive form of cancer and very sudden. So again, best of wishes to him and his entire family, his mom, and especially Don Sr., his dad, as he endures a very difficult fight.